You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Confederate History Month coverage continues here on TPC. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, third hour here now. What a great and well-executed 2 hours so far, if I do say so myself. Thanks to Gene Andrews, our guest in the last hour. And now we're joined by Neil Kumar, a former candidate for Congress who is now in the final year at the University of Arkansas School of Law. It's always great to talk to Neil.
And in terms of courage, he's our modern-day General Forrest.
Yeah, we might get into that in a moment. We were learning a few things during the commercial break, but he's back with us primarily tonight to discuss his chapter in the brand-new book, The Honorable Cause of Free South. He was not with us there in South Carolina a couple of weeks ago when some of the other authors were for that book launch, so we're happy to have him now and that he had time in his schedule to join us tonight. Neil, great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, always great to be here.
Well, let's start right there, my friend. You contributed a chapter in the book. Why don't you tell us that the message you were conveying in the pages you wrote?
Yeah, so it's basically like a white paper introducing the differences and the similarities between Southern nationalism and white nationalism. And that's an important topic because all too often the two terms are conflated. So you have a lot of, you know, racially conscious young Southern boys who will still call themselves white nationalists by default, even though they're really Southern nationalists. And so you have all this money and energy in the white nationalist space that really should be in the Southern nationalist space. And while there are some similarities, we do at the end of the day have different missions.
You talk about your own very interesting background, and I think, listen, I mean, I of course appreciated all of the chapters and all of the writers, but yours is certainly right there at the very top. It was, in many ways, the most powerful chapter. I think yours, along with Dr. Hill, in terms of just really throwing down the gauntlet. Padraig's was great. I mean, I didn't see any weak spots. I'm just saying, I really, especially appreciated your chapter because this is a very important topic. So continue on with your findings and your opinions on. Well, you lay it out in the title of the chapter itself. Cousins, you ask with a question mark, distinctions between Southern nationalism and white nationalism. Continue on, Neil.
Yeah, well, we, as Southern nationalists, we have to start from the premise that the United States of America is dead. It's a rotten, bloated, festering corpse, you know, toxic chemical spills and child trannies and, you know, rampant black crime, just a real nightmare. The USA today is the most evil civilization that has ever existed on the face of the earth. And
hear, hear.
We have no love for this, what used to be called our country. We are Southerners. We care about the South. Right? I don't care what happens to New York or California. I care about the Confederate States. And you know, we are white, but it's more than that. We're Christian and we're Southern. It's not an abstract identity. It's tied to a particular people, a particular culture, a particular place. We don't want to save the USA. We don't want some kind of a pan-European supranational organization like the EU. We just want Dixieland, and that's it.
The smaller the better, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot more feasible. Our project is a lot more feasible. And also, you know, a lot of white nationalist discourse is tinged by, you know, hateful rhetoric. And we do hate our enemies, but the Southern Project is motivated by love for our own more than anything else.
That's absolutely right. And I don't know if you've been able to see the reviews. We've been talking about them, been sharing them. I know you, along with the other authors, are part of a group chat, and some of this stuff gets transmitted back and forth, the stuff to keep up with all the messages and emails, I know. But we were talking about this earlier. It seems as though the very reviews of this book have elicited a sense of passion among the very people who just read it, because that's certainly something that they're drawing from what they have read.
And Europeans in particular, you know, European nationalists are reading this and drawing inspiration from it.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Because we've been reviewed by Tom Sunic in Croatia. Now, he did that for Kevin McDonald's publication, but Remy Tremblay for a French language journal and Sasha Rossmuller for a German magazine. What do you think it is about this book that is bringing out that passion for nationalism from people far away from Dixie Shores, Neil?
Well, I think it's the time period that we're in. We're seeing a shift away. You know, people call the USA Uncle Sam, but I think Uncle Shmuel is more accurate. But anyway, Uncle Shmuel and his minions, this unipolar world where the USA controls everything, we're moving away from that. We're moving into a multipolar world where power is shared between groups of unique peoples. And so traditionalist nationalists are all over the world in all colors and all continents, right? And they have a passion for their people, for their land. So there's a move away from these, you know, Leviathan, behemoth, evil totalitarian states towards more devolved localism. And so I think that is what, you know, that's what's happening with protests all over Europe. That's what's happening in Russia. That's what's happening in Asia, Africa, all over the world. So we're tapping into that.
Ukraine, for example, you know, America has peaked out. It seems like we have, you know, the Jewish globalists that are behind that war have overplayed their hand, and now it seems like the whip hand is in the Chinese and in the Russians, and I think that's probably going to turn out to be a good thing for Americans, and particularly Southerners, because
absolutely.
Now we can tend to
the
our own
knitting. The best thing that could happen for us is for the USA to lose some kind of a war with Russia and China. You know, for the when the dollar ends as the global reserve currency, which is going to happen, it's going to be painful in the short term, but the U.S. government will no longer have the resources to oppress us, to do what it has been doing to us for the last 200 years, almost 200 years.
Amen. Hey, and, Neil, you are right on target, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm optimistic. We're living in a good
Keep
moment.
Keep on preaching,
a dangerous
brother.
Moment, but a good moment.
We're going to go let him cool down for a moment. We've got him for one more segment. I mean, and I'm going to read something that he wrote in the book, but also something that he wrote as a response during his campaign for Congress. Powerful stuff from Neil Kumar coming up right after this. You're really going to want to hear it.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
In message 1, we said that Satan, the father of lies, John 8:44, gave the left evil, spiritual power the more they used the lies. The political left today is the beast. Now the Bible confirms that the dragon gave him, the beast, his power. Revelation 13:2. The extra evil spiritual power that comes from the beast by their lying is what accounts for the string of the leftist criminals in the government that have never yet been prosecuted. It also explains why American capitalists support communism in the 21st century. Note 1. That behavior of capitalists was predicted by Vladimir Lenin, a cell of the beast. Note 2. Henry Ford was a capitalist, and he would have never gone communist. The difference between Ford and the present-day end-time capitalists is that Ford was born and educated in the Kingdom of Christ, 19th century America, the New Jerusalem, Revelation 21.
God's blessing be with them, wisdom in the prayer of every patriot's heart. And to them may victory always be given, and ne'er from their banners depart. I hear their war cry sounding deep over mountain and glen. Their bright gleaming bayonets have kept the hill. Tis the march of the southern wind, tis the march of the southern men.
March of the Southern Men still exists and still is carried on, and it is being carried on tonight. Now, I want to read an excerpt from the chapter that Neil contributed to this book, Neil Kumar, our guest right now. But first, just to remind you of the kind of man that we're talking to in Neil Kumar, still in law school, still about, you know, certainly much younger than Keith and much younger than me as well. But he sets an example that that people his age should be following, and he's got the medal men twice and three times his age don't have. Yeah,
well,
that's right.
He's passing through the fires now, and see where I'm on the other side. I've had a career. I'm still licensed and whatnot. He's up here bearding the lion at this particular time when he's most vulnerable, trying to get licensed to be a lawyer.
And
he's not backing up a bit.
Not backing up a bit. When he ran for Congress, you'll have to remember that a couple of years ago when he ran, you had the situation involving the shooter in Buffalo. Then, according to the media, with a grain of salt, we'll take it. He was motivated by what they call the great replacement theory. Of course, it's the great replacement fact. And the Southern Poverty Law Center emailed Neil Kumar, and this is what they wrote. Your platform lists ending the great replacement theory as its first plank. This was when he was running for Congress. SPLC asking Neil, do you have a comment on these issues? Does the recent mass shooting make you reconsider your position or rhetoric? Now, this is, again, the point in the game where 9 out of 10, hell, 99 out of 100 people running for office would capitulate, would grovel, would apologize. Here was Neil's...
You say, are you a man or a mouse? And 99 would say, pass the cheese.
Here's what Neil said in response to the Southern Poverty Law Center's question. Quote, the fact that the Biden administration is currently engaged in ethnic cleansing against white Americans, quite literally replacing the majority population of this nation with compliant third world peasants who will guarantee the Democratic Party a permanent majority, makes the great replacement a reality rather than a theory. Now, it doesn't get any stronger than that. I don't care who you are, how old you are.
Well, to use an old southern phrase, that strong as Garrett Snuff.
Neil, I salute you. That's the way to do it.
Well, thank you. You know, it's funny about that. They have this like automatic placing the word theory after the word great replacement, even if it doesn't make any grammatical sense, right? So my platform said end the great replacement. But in their question, they said that my platform said ending the great replacement theory. So it doesn't even make any sense. They're just programmed to put the word theory in there.
That's funny. All right.
It's just a theory. Why would you bother with it?
It just goes to show... Yeah. Again, Neil is a guy who's already been very much battle-tested. Now, as a man who's lived his life under fire, his entire adult life anyway, I value the company and the friendship of men who have equally paid the price and have walked through that fire. Neil
stands
has done
up,
it.
And as my wife's grandfather used to say, he'll call a spade a dirty shovel.
I knew that was going to get mentioned before the end of the night. Well, let's go back to the book. The book, of course, is The Honorable Cause of Free South. Our entire Confederate History Month series this year sort of revolved around this book. But I'm going to read now, and Keith, I think this is going to be something you'll be able to relate to as the elder statement of our triumvirate here on the air tonight. And this is what Neil writes. If we fail, life is not worth living. We have to understand this. Everything that we love and cherish about our country, all that is pure and good on this earth, is directly tied to the reclamation of our southern nation. Remember and never forget what we are fighting for. The Andy Griffith Show has always been one of my favorite programs. Mayberry, North Carolina, the fictional town that it was set in, is a perfect image of mid-century Southern life. Our enemies tell us that Mayberry never existed. They're wrong. Hundreds, maybe thousands of Mayberries existed all over the South. Can you attest to that, Keith?
Yeah, I absolutely can. And I can tell you, rural is good, urban is bad. If there's anything in the last 20 years that has been proven to me is that, you know, all of these great thinkers of the past were right. You know, cities are the cesspools, and, the right values and the good people are out in the rural areas, and that's what the South represents. Rural wisdom, rural rectitude.
And Neil, these are the communities we wish to restore, and this is what your chapter's about, an organic nation that is tied by blood and faith, correct? And it did exist before.
Yeah, exactly. Keith put it perfectly, and that's exactly the point, is that these towns used to exist. You know, they're dying. They are dying, and we're in danger of losing them forever, though, if we don't act now to save them and to rebuild them. You know, this is not, it's not lost art. We can still do this. It's just going to take a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of purging of the negative elements that now plague.
Well, see, globalism killed a lot of it by taking out the economic industries and engines that these towns relied on for to be viable economically. And with America and its global ambitions descending, waning, that's probably a good sign, because I think America is going to have to rely on its own people and its own industrial capacity in the future, and that's going to be good for rural America and the South in particular.
Well, Neil mentioned it. You know, you get off the dollar and options present themselves that don't currently exist. I was talking about that with Mike Gaddy on his RBN show earlier today as a guest on that program. It's just, you know, the only thing, we're not a nation. A nation is bound together by blood and soil. We are a group of many nations living on one continent that have nothing in common except for consumerism. And when the economy
right.
falls, who knows what's going to happen. But in response, I think, to your chapter, although it's not specifically stated, Remy Tremblay for the French language journal that he writes for wrote this in his review, and I'd like to get your response to this, Neil, as we close out this segment. This is what Remy writes. Let it be understood, Dixieland is an organic nation and possessed all its attributes before the Civil War. Southern nationalism aims precisely at one thing, the preservation of this people, which, like all others, is unique and deserves to survive. Contrary to what some outside eyes might think, it is also not necessarily white nationalism with the regional sauce aimed at legitimizing the cause. While Southern nationalism definitely has an ethnic dimension, it has not pursued the exact same goals as the American alternative right. Obviously, a lot of overlap. Yes, we understand that, obviously. Remy concludes, the idea of secession, which, according to a recent poll, received the support of 44% of Republican voters, obviously does not aim to recreate a copy of the United States in the South, a reduced version of this globalist Babylon that has become this country whose decline is undeniable. What the authors of this book want is a new nation, based not on delusions of grandeur, but on the traditional way of life of a South that has not been assimilated.
And what it is this. Remember, Teddy Roosevelt said America should never be allowed to become a polyglot boarding house for the world. Well, the South is not. The South, unlike the North, did not have waves of immigrants coming over. We basically have the same founding stock now that we had back when the Civil War was about to be fought.
Neil, final word to you, my friend. You can respond to what Remy Tremblay wrote in his review or anything else you'd like to cover about your chapter or the cause in general that
yeah.
we haven't yet.
Well, that's an important point that Remy raised that I also raised, which is that the South as a nation, it predates America as a nation. American nationalism did not exist until the Gettysburg Address, basically. It did not exist until after the war. whereas the South existed as a concrete place and a distinct people before even the American founding.
Well, I haven't thought about that. Yeah, that's right.
It still exists now. You know, basically the people in the hills of Arkansas, it's not, you know, we didn't have Irish, we didn't have Central Europeans, we didn't have Jews, all these people flooding into the South. We basically have the same stock, and that's why we are truly
in the rural
nation.
South. Yeah, yeah, I mean, the cities are.
Yeah, but we didn't even have it then. You know, in the Civil War, they just had waves of Irishmen coming off, and they were basically enlisted in the Army as soon as they stepped off the boat. But, see, the South has a distinct group of people, black and white, that have been here basically since, you know, before the founding of our nation. Not our nation, our country, the United States of America.
Which is most certainly not our nation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm about to say, let me correct myself.
Neil, final word to you.
Yeah, well, our biggest issue in the South would be doing something about the cities. The cities need to, I'm not exactly sure what the solution is, but Dickie Betts and Great Southern have a great song called Atlanta's Burning Down. It was a tragedy in the 1860s. Now, I'm not so sure.
Maybe purification.
Yeah. Let us be purified by the fires of our tribulation, as it was put in any event. Yeah, we love Atlanta, don't we? But, there's at least a couple of good guys there. We want to, the last of the Sodom there and Gomorrah. Hey, Neil, thank you for your good work. Godspeed to you as you graduate from law school. We'll talk to you again soon. Stay tuned, everybody.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News. I'm Jerry Barmash. White House aides are hinting that President Biden could announce his re-election bid as soon as Tuesday. Biden says he'll continue to stand by the FDA's evidence-based approval of the abortion pill mifepristone. Biden made the comment following the Supreme Court's decision to allow the drug to stay on the market. The 7-2 vote came after the court extended a temporary stay on a Texas federal judge's ruling to halt production and distribution of the drug. The U.S. Embassy is warning American citizens in Sudan to shelter in place until further notice. Thousands of Americans are believed to be in Sudan, and one U.S. citizen is among at least 400 people killed so far from fighting in the African nation. The Pentagon is ramping up forces in the region as the Biden administration weighs the possible evacuation of the embassy. Beach plans for many in and around Los Angeles were dealt a blow today. A sewage spill of 250,000 gallons is in the process of being cleaned up. This Long Beach resident is just trying to be reflective.
It's going to be a nice weekend and can't go to the beach. It's also very trashed and polluted. So, yeah, it just sucks.
Beaches are also closed in Santa Monica and Marina Del Rey. The FAA is heading into the busy travel season without a leader.
Acting FAA Chief Billy Nolen is stepping down. He made the announcement in a letter to agency staff. The Biden administration has had trouble filling the post. The previous pick, Phil Washington, withdrew his name from consideration after Republican leaders claimed he lacked the experience and the qualifications needed for the job. I'm John Schaefer.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is seeking federal aid for flood victims in Fort Lauderdale. At least 2 feet of rain fell in some parts of the county earlier this month, and up to 1,000 homes were badly damaged. This is USA News.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer, and again, airfare...
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this? Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica, Australia?
Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Sunny, yesterday my life was filled with rain. Sunny, you smiled at me and really eased the pain. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you.
Anytime you hear that, you know Sonny Thomas isn't far away.
He's in the house.
He's in the house. And I was just telling Sonny during the break, he's a guest I never have to prep for. Anytime Sonny Thomas is on the show, I know he is bringing ready-made radio to the airwaves and serve and put on the plate and serve it up.
Well, the thing is, just throw the ball and sit back and admire the broken field run.
It makes a very easy job for me when Sonny's on. Sonny Thomas is the founder of Resolution Radio, an affiliate network that also airs TPC. He is also the host of the Sonny Thomas Show and a very long time and good friend of ours. Sonny, it's great to have you back on tonight.
Always a pleasure. Come on the show and talk to your listeners, brother.
Well, listen, you and I were talking, I don't know, a few weeks ago, I guess it was now, and I don't even remember exactly what was covered, but I do remember telling you, I said, Sonny, please try to remember exactly what you've said during this conversation, because it would make for great radio during our Confederate History Month coverage. Now, of course, we're not going to call Sonny a Yankee. Sonny's a Midwesterner. He was born from outside of the South. There are people who are Northerners who were born outside of the South who are with us a lot more than native-born Southerners are. Sonny is like Neil Kumar, like everybody you've heard, well, really on this show from day one.
He's a spiritual brother.
Yeah, there you go. Now, with that being said, Sonny, what's your message tonight to the gang?
Well, like I always say, I'm no Yankee. I'm a Buckeye and damn proud of it. Yankees belong in the Northeast Quadrant of the United States. And we need to saw that particular section of the country off and just let it float out to sea like Barry Goldwater suggested.
Barry was right.
The Acela Corridor and the left coast, if we could somehow find some way for them to drift off into the ocean, we would be so much better off, wouldn't we, just Sonny?
Oh, I've got one. I got two words for you. Andreas Fault.
Yeah. Do they have an Andreas Fault on the Acela Corridor, though?
God could make one. God let it come. All right. So seriously, though, let's talk about why you wanted to come on this particular series, Sonny. I mean, you're always a welcome guest throughout the year, and anytime you've always got something that you can contribute to the program, but you wanted to come on during Confederate History Month.
Yeah, for one, I'm a big fan of history, and of course, a lot of times growing up and stuff, our school system was very specific on omitting parts of history. Obviously, they didn't talk about the battles or some of the real reasons of the Revolutionary War. They totally skipped the War of 1812, so it's basically just a skirmish. Talk about the Mexican-American War very briefly, but they always want to hurry up and fast forward it to 1861 with the war between the states, and basically it's all about slavery. And it's like, that's not the case at all.
And they don't want to say anything about people like Nathan Bedford Forrest. They want to talk about, U.S. Grant and about Abraham Lincoln and maybe Robert E. Lee, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's another thing, too, to kind of underscore this. I mean, I've been to one of you guys' events, and you had a presentation on the Battle of Fort Pillow and how that was one of the first tabloid things where they really tried to spin it to make it look like Forrest is some big, huge aggressor, and it wasn't the case at all. When you look at the actual logistics of what happened and with the fact that they built that on a slope going down to the river, basically whoever's got the high ground is going to have the advantage, and so they make it look like it's a massacre, and it wasn't like that at all. They just had a strategic advantage. But they got a hate on Forrest because of his affiliation later on with the Klan. But the bottom line is this guy entered the rank as private and became major general in a very short amount of time. But he worked his way up every single space. He didn't skip just because he had a college degree or he was some sort of prominence because he was a business owner. No, he came in as a private and ended up being a general because of the fact of his natural leadership skill. So, again, he just gets hated upon because of his later affiliation. But me, big state sovereignty guy, I understand the history of the United States a lot more, and I understand that to most Republicans, I always pose this question. When you see the name United States, what do you see emphasized first, United or states? I don't know about you, brothers and sisters, but I see the word states as being emphasized over united because of the fact that we were founded as a confederation. And when we sent the delegation to go fix the Articles of Confederation because it wasn't working because a lot of the larger states were running the gamut, such as New York, Virginia, and Georgia, something needed to be done here. So we sent a delegation up there to go work on this. And the political nature of a convention is they could take it and do whatever they want with it. Thankfully, we had honorable men who came there with various backgrounds, of legal backgrounds, as well as patriots, and they hammered out the Constitution of the United States. And not to mention that the Bill of Rights was a major issue to be considered afterwards, which if you read
Federalist Papers.
The Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, it really shows the arguments between the two factions. Plus the fact you had a lot of issues between Jefferson and Hamilton on how the debt should be handled. And there's a lot of fascinating information on Hamilton on how who really run him and why he was kind of put into the place where he was. But the biggest thing about that is you understand as us as states, when we agreed to the Constitution, that we gave up a little bit of power for a very specific line of items in the Constitution that they were supposed to govern. And then the Bill of Rights says, that shall nots, which means basically says you can't do this. And Ninth and Tenth Amendments basically says whatever we did include in here, you can't do that either because the power goes back to the states and goes back to the people. So and that is the various main reasons of why we formed this government. But it's also an issue of the various tariffs. And I know, Keith, you've gone over this a little bit as well, that the various tariffs that the North was imposing on the South, especially in the early to mid 1800s, was a major factor to the point where South Carolina, through the Nullification Convention, was looking at seceding in 1833. A lot of people don't know that, that South Carolina was already hitting that drumbeat as early as then because of the fact that the tariffs of 1824 and 1828 had come to a head. And the biggest issue was, even though you had the Missouri Compromise, and the Northwest Ordinances, it says slavery can't go past this point, et cetera, that when Buchanan was in office, he was pushing for huge tariffs from 15% to 37%, and Morrell then up tariff. To 47% within 4 years. So, and Lincoln was not only going to force it, he was going to enact on it in any way necessary, and that was the final straw.
Well, see, that was what people don't understand. That was the real cause of the Civil War. The South was paying 80% of the money into the federal treasury that ran the federal government, and the South got tired of having its cow milk through the fence, and it was not going to change. They realized that, and they were basically being treated like an agricultural colony by Washington, D.C., We're not the United States. We've been the dis-United States for too long. We've experimented. We've been to marriage counseling. This marriage is unsalvageable. We need to have
a national divorce.
But like most people that want a divorce, we prefer to have an uncontested divorce.
Right. Well, another issue is, too, is the fact that the South, obviously, especially with the cotton gin and other agriculture equipment that was coming online, which was just the very beginning of the Industrial Revolution, the South preferred to get equipment from England, which was much superior quality. And even with the transportation cost of shipping it overseas, you can make that up within a short amount of time after you get it up and running.
That's just part of it, too, though, Sonny. The other part of it is this. Back then, nations did not tolerate trade imbalances. So, in other words, England and France were not going to buy our agricultural products unless we bought something from them. And the natural thing to buy from them was the products that they actually had undisputed superiority in, like you said, manufactured products.
Here's another situation, too, is the fact that many Indian nations owned slaves as well, specifically Cherokee, Creek, Choctaw, and Chickasaw. The Cherokee owned the most. So they would have a natural alliance with the Confederate states because of the fact they're already in the region. And the fact that they owned slaves for their own reasons. So again, but they were also independent nations. So people don't really realize as well that there were other factors within the Confederate states. But then, you know,
well,
the biggest
that was
issue
proven
this,
out by that, that was borne out by what happened. Stan Waddy, the Cherokee chief, was the last Confederate general to surrender.
How about that? Of all the generals, Stan Waddy, yeah. He was a hero. I mean, he was a fighter. He fought for the right.
He was successful.
You know, I'll take him. Hey, Liz, let's skip the last break. I want to stick with Sonny all the way through the wall here. But continue on, gentlemen. Hey, Sonny, you were talking about national divorce. You were telling us during the break. You've got your idea of a national divorce far exceeds that of the most ambitious secessionists.
Tell us about it.
Absolutely. I have spoken out at various events and stuff. One was in the South, actually, in Georgia, about 4 or 5 years ago. And it says very specifically, we need a 50-state secession. And we need to do that because it renders the federal government superfluous. Because what are you going to do? Send the military in and go after 50 states? Good luck. So that's an interesting thing. But I think we could do this.
Let's
but the
this
first
break.
Thing we have to do is we have to take over our state houses first, then worry about the national issue.
Well, a 50-state secession. Now, I think, what were we talking about, Keith? We were talking about how the cities are bringing down the states.
And yeah, basically, you know, our enemies are a very small geographical part of the nation or the country called the United States of America. It's just a few cities, places like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York City,
New York,
Portland,
Stella Carter, Portland, Oregon, Seattle,
Atlanta,
Washington, things like that. Yeah, Atlanta. Yeah, and, you know, probably the Black Belt of Mississippi and Alabama. But
pun intended.
Those are, yeah, right. Yeah, no pun intended. But this is, there's not much to be, you know, we have the vast majority of the landmass that is the United States of America is red, and they would be with us.
Now, here's the thing, what the leftists, what the wokest would say is people vote, land doesn't. How would you counter that argument?
Well, they do vote, and they have voted Republican, so that shows that they're not with the woke agenda. The woke agenda is the tail that wags the dog. Basically, a small group of very influential and wealthy people are ruling America tyrannically against the wishes of the vast majority of the people.
And we know what tribe that is.
Also the land. Exactly.
We know what tribe that is.
With the idea of secession,
yeah, we do.
Conservative Eastern Oregon has already voted to join Greater Idaho and secede from the Portland-dominated state. So you already have secessionist movements afoot this very night, Sonny.
And no, not
theory.
Texas
has said that they're going to do it.
They've taken it from theory to practice, yeah.
Yeah, I support Cal-Lexit totally.
You've got movements going on in California. You've got the potential of three possibilities. You have a no-Cal-SoCal split. You also have the state of Jefferson, which is basically an enclave of basically fairly astute whites that are tired of being taxated for everything the southern part of California does. So they've actually talked about having that particular enclave as the state of Jefferson to be there as well. Not to mention, with me being from Ohio, we have a particular rivalry against Michigan over the Battle of Toledo. And they were deciding whether Toledo belonged to the state of Ohio or the Michigan Territory. So it actually came to fisticuffs at the time, and they told Congress to figure this out. The problem is they gave Toledo to Ohio, and they gave the upper peninsula of the Wisconsin Territory to Michigan. Because I always wonder, how does Michigan have two peninsulae? How does that work? And so I basically called, if you're going to have any type of splitting going on, that either you give the UP of Michigan back to Wisconsin, or you make it its own separate state. But unfortunately, there isn't that much there, and it probably ended up being Democratic because that's how they roll. You know what I mean?
But well, again, I just got to say this quickly, and then to you, Keith. 11 counties have already voted. I mean, 11. You know, this is happening to join to secede from Oregon and join Idaho. So, and when these dominoes start to fall, how many more will follow? Because you know we've talked about this almost to the point of exhaustion about how just last year in Texas, the Republican Party of Texas at their annual convention in Houston voted to put secession on the ballot. So
well, see, we talk about California like it's a monolith, but really the only blue counties are the ones that are right on the coastline. All the other places,
yes,
like Bakersfield, Fresno, places like that, are red counties.
Right. Not that, but here in Ohio, for example, we have more. We have more municipal areas than any other state in the union because of the fact that we have, like, you know, the three C's. You got Cincinnati, Columbus, and Cleveland. You got Dayton, Toledo, Youngstown. So we have a lot of blue stuff there, but we're still generally a red state, but in purple in many areas. So that's an issue in itself. But
areas that have large numbers of blacks that are one.
Yes.
And the other thing are college towns like Charlottesville,
yes,
Virginia, or Columbus, Ohio, places like that.
But there's something else I also noticed too, Keith, that even you get in a little bit more rural counties, such as Greene County, which is just outside of Dayton, you have the city of Xenia. And I've noticed that they have a fairly decent black population. We figured it out that basically if there's any type of county seat and they have any type of basic infrastructure, such as sidewalks, for example, that even these smaller counties end up becoming enclaves for these low-rent guys because of the fact that they feed off of the, you know, off of the taxpayers' money and stuff. And so any type of stuff that goes on there, we see that's where they start having centralization, and then all of a sudden they start going blue in those towns.
Well, I can tell you what's happened in the South. Basically, the cities attract people that where they are given tutorials by Catholic charities and groups like this about how to manipulate government programs and regulations to get all this free stuff. So that's where they are. They go there because they want the free stuff. And as a result, they wind up being places that are essentially contrary to the so-called values that our nation was supposedly founded on of thrift and industry and, task orientation, things like that. They don't get done. They're places where people are lying about trying to find some way to make money without working.
Well, not only that, but we used to be a saver nation. And then in the 1920s, when you start buying stocks on margin, that was the problem. I mean, even Joe Kennedy saw that. He said, when the shoe shine boy starts giving me stock advice, it's time to get the hell out. So he sold all this stuff 6 months prior to the collapse because of the fact that he saw it coming. So he actually bought the Kennedy compound with the spoils he got from selling all of his stocks and stuff off. And if you read books about the Kennedy boys, a lot of them didn't even know there was a depression going on because they were essentially insulated from all that. Well, it's interesting because John went overseas to Germany in the 1930s, and actually for his thesis statement, he wrote about how Hitler had actually rejuvenated a lot of their economy in a short amount of time, yet the United States was still mired in depression because they thought they could spin their way out of it. So it's interesting that Kennedy would
One thing they never tell you about Hitler today is that in 1938, Time magazine made him Man of the Year. Because
yes.
of the economic rejuvenation that he engineered for the nation of Germany. Now, Mr. Kennedy, I can tell you this about him. I've got a little interesting sidebar. Henry Loeb was a Jew I would like to have set loose on the whole nation in the world. He was the mayor of Memphis during the garbage worker strike that culminated in the death of Martin Luther King. He was a Jew. He had an Ivy League education. He went to Brown University, but he was 6'6", was a PT boat captain in World War II, and looked and sounded like John Wayne. And what he told me was this. He left Temple Israel in Memphis in order to come to the church I was going to, St. John's Episcopal at the time, because that's where his wife had gone. He was married to a shiksa that had been a maid of cotton. He was kind of like George Washington, first in peace, first in war, first in the hearts of his countrymen. And
right.
when he came over there, I was in the high school Sunday school class, and I asked him why he left Temple Israel. He said, well, I'll be honest with you. He said, I got tired of being harangued by Rabbi Wax every Sabbath about what I needed to do in the garbage workers' strike. He said, Rabbi Wax believed in the separation of church and state, just not the separation of synagogue and state. I thought that was a pretty good comment.
Yeah. I can see that. But again,
he was a staunch segregationist.
Well, again, that's the thing that gets me is we've been pushing desegregation for all these decades, and we've shown it doesn't work. Now the blacks actually want to segregate themselves. I'm like, fine. You know what? Then let's reverse some Supreme Court rulings. Let's start with Brown versus Board of Education. I totally agree with that. So I think that we need to start really look at some of these cases and start bringing it up to our Supreme Court justices. Hey, I think some of these decisions in the past need to be looked at and reversed.
Well, since they reversed Plessy versus Ferguson with Brown versus Board of Education, they need to do the same thing with Brown. Brown basically was a violation of due process. Appellate mm-hmm. cases are supposed to be decided by stare decisis. That's similar case precedent. common law precedent, as they call it, or if it involves a statute or a constitutional provision like the Brown decision did, the 14th Amendment, you look to statutory history or statutory construction. They lost on all of those inquiries, so what did they do? They based a decision on an unprecedented basis, a sociological paper by a guy named Kenneth Clark, his so-called doll studies, which were even then dishonestly presented to the court. He didn't tell the people, well, basically the doll studies were this. They got black children and showed them a white doll and a black doll, and they said, which one do you like best and why? And if they picked the white doll more often than the black doll, that was supposed to show that they were suffering from some type of, psychological impairment because of segregation. What they didn't tell the court was that they ran these studies in two places. One was Massachusetts that had an integrated public school system, and the other, Arkansas, that had a segregated school system. And guess what? Even though the black children in both places picked the white doll more often, the black children in the segregated school system in Arkansas picked the black doll more often than the black children in the integrated school system in Massachusetts, which would seem to indicate that segregation is good for their self-esteem and not the other way around.
Right. And like I said, to me, I think the last true battle of the Civil War was fought when Governor Wallace let that black girl into the school. I think that was a major, major thing. He should have never blinked. He should have had steadfast on that one because of the fact
I'll tell you who I think never should have blinked was Orville Faubus. He got the Arkansas militia out, and then in violation of posse.
How many years earlier was that than Wallace? About seven?
About that, six or seven, something like that. But then Eisenhower sent the 101st Airborne down there to oppose the Arkansas militia, which was a direct violation of the Posse Comitatus Act, which was the first act that the South passed in Congress after the end of Reconstruction. That was that the federal military would never again be used as a police force against American citizens. And basically, Faubus should have just fought it out there in Little Rock with them. That would have really brought things to a head. But unfortunately, when all is said and done, more will be said than done very often.
Well, here's the problem. I do believe if it's not the Patriot Act, it's the Warner Defense Bill, where basically they've eliminated Posse Comitatus. So now the federal government can go in there at any given time now and force their will. So here's the problem. Where does the state sovereignty come in? Because if you have a state that says that we declare that we are going to do this and not do that, even using nullification, Biden can send in a damn division and try to overtake that governor's mansion. That's a serious issue to raise, gentlemen, because of the fact that we've talked about secession, but some of the tools that we had given ourselves after we learned some of those valuable lessons from history have now been taken away from us. I mean, the Constitution was to prevent people like Biden. First of all, he's a usurper in the first place, and secondly, he oversteps his boundaries.
Of course, it's George W. Bush that passed the Patriot Act, which is the source.
Exactly. And no one read. No one could read it.
Well, see, the thing is, too, that what we have, we need to just ignore the federal government in every way. They can even send troops in, ignore them. You know, do what you want to do.
All right, listen, hang on. Real quick,
can State Massacre ring a bell there, brother? I mean, you can put flowers in the gun barrels, but they'll shoot out of them.
Following in the footsteps of our ancestors. Hey, Sonny, listen, before we run out of time, I want to be sure to ask you the most important question. Tell us a little more about Resolution Radio. Tell us a little bit more about the Sonny Thomas show. To know Sonny is to love him. You've heard the kind of commentary. Heard the kind of commentary you're going to get out of Sonny. You're going to get a lot more on the Sonny Thomas show. How can they find you?
ResolutionRDO.com. You can follow us at Sonny Thomas Show on Wimkin, Getter, Gab, Twitter, and Telegram. And at ResolutionRDO on Getter, Gab, Twitter, and Telegram, but on Twitter you have to add a one behind it. So that's how you can find a lot of listings of our programs as well. And my show is on Thursdays at 7 p.m. We have also the Political Cesspool. We also feature other programs on there as well. We have the Jay Dyer Show. We have Kate Daly Show. We also have Nordic Frontier, which is the English language program of the Nordic Resistance Movement in Scandinavia, as well as Fash the Nation, which is also a new program as well, which is a little bit longer in length, usually over 3 hours, as well as TPC. So there's a lot of information you can catch on there on any given day. and be able to listen, as well as American Dissident Voices with Kevin Off of Strom. So we have a wide variety of commentators who talk about a myriad of topics. And again, I'm working on doing a big program to have people talk about the 50 state secession. And James and Keith, you're always welcome to come in and comment, brothers.
We got
to
do it. Let's make a date for it. Yeah.
And there he is, Sonny Thomas, sound as the gold standard for the dollar and strong as Garrett Snow.
He's great. And, folks, you can link over to the Sonny Thomas Show at the top of my Twitter handle, at James Edwards TPC. We tagged him for tonight's weekly show promo. Link over to his Twitter handle. You can get all that information for Resolution Radio, another network that syndicates the political cesspool. We're thankful to Sonny for that. And for his work and service to the cause. For Sonny Thomas and Neil Kumar and Gene Andrews, our guests this evening, for Keith Alexander, for our entire staff and crew in Utah and in Florida, I am your host, James Edwards, and we'll talk to you next week when we wrap up Confederate History Month 2023. Good night, everybody.